It's another episode of One on One with Joe O'Donnell. Thanks for tuning in. Presented by SodaStick, SodaStick.com. Don't forget to use my code ONE-ON-ONE for 15% off your next order. SodaStick, designed by Minnesotans for Minnesotans. Super comfy shirts, the hats that, as I've told you before, I can't get off my kids' heads. They wear them basically 24/7. The Minnesota Twins are playing great baseball. The Minnesota Timberwolves are in the playoffs. You can get all that kind of recent local swag at SodaStick. But of course, the Minnesota Wild gear, the locker room collection, as I like to call it there, where you get basically what the players are wearing in the dressing room, sometimes even onto the ice underneath their equipment. Yeah, most of it, almost all of it, from SodaStick. So check them out today. Again, SodaStick.com. Use code 101 for 15% off your next order. SodaStick and the Beauty League always go hand in hand. We're almost at the Beauty League summer hockey season out of Braemar and Edina. And I was just talking to Landon over at SodaStick just the other day, and he said the new DaBeauty League swag is awesome, and they, of course, will be producing that at a high rate for you to gobble up all that DaBeauty League swag brought to you by SodaStick. My guest today on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell is Johnny Lazarus. He is a rising, and I mean rising, content creator pretty much all over the social media world. He's a New York native, currently a host and analyst for Daily Faceoff and Bleacher Report Open Ice. He's a former college hockey player, played at both UMass Amherst and Mercyhurst. He's really an unabashed Rangers fan, and he's host of the Blue Crew Pod. Plus, he's got some hockey gambling stuff in the works on the social media side. I mean, if you're not following him on Twitter, you're crazy. JLazzy23, JLazzy23 on Twitter for Johnny Lazarus. Really excited for this conversation. Of course, the Minnesota Wild offseason is already underway, unfortunately, but the Stanley Cup playoffs have been great. We're late into round two. We're getting down to the conference finals here in the next couple of days. Lots of surprises, lots to get to. We'll talk with Johnny about the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll talk with him as well about sort of the media landscape today. And we'll also get into the state of college hockey. A lot of top picks recently, college hockey products. We'll check in with Johnny Lazarus on all of that. Again, presented by SodaStick. Don't forget to like, subscribe, send it to your friends and family. Appreciate all the support. Get a few more episodes, certainly this offseason, coming your way. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Johnny Lazarus. Johnny, great to have you on. Thanks for joining me. I'm thinking, if you're okay with it, I got a new name for you. Johnny Content, right? We got Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau. You're Johnny Content. What do you think?
That's the first time I'm hearing it, so maybe it'll take some getting used to, but Joe, I appreciate it. I guess maybe it's got some legs. We can get it going.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, let's put it in the working section, all right? But seriously, dude, like, you know, I appreciate you joining me. I know you're extremely busy, especially with the Rangers still in a playoff run and you being a big Rangers supporter and the Blue Crew Pod host, but you got so much going on. Daily Faceoff, Bleacher Report, there's a little betting angle to your social media stuff. How do you manage it all? Are you having fun with it? And just today, for instance, I know how freaking busy you were. Why don't you lay it out for the listeners what you've been up to?
Yeah, I mean, I could manage it a little bit better. I don't really sleep a lot, which is kind of a negative, and I don't really have a dating life right now, which kind of sucks, but we'll get there at some point. But I think for me it's always day to day, kind of like a player's mentality. You know, it's so hard to look into the future and to, you know, see yourself somewhere kind of in this industry because so many things can change in such a short amount of time. I mean, you know, this time a year ago, I was kind of doing content on the side and I was working a 9-to-5 corporate job doing ad sales for the Tennis Channel. And, you know, I never really thought hockey would be full time for me. So, you know, I feel super fortunate that I've been able to do this full time. You know, that said, like, I'm always just trying to do as much as I can. And that could be, you know, detrimental in some aspects because, you know, I think in a negative way, sometimes I feel a little bit burnt out. But, you know, at that same time, it's like, I feel like a lot of people would kind of kill to do what I get to do. So it's like, you know, I feel like you kind of got to take advantage of it and make the most of it. You know, it's awesome. And to wake up every day and talk hockey and to, you know, go to the rink every day and, be around guys like Jonathan Quick and, you know, Chris Kreider and, you know, Sidney Crosby, and just, you know, guys I kind of looked up to as a kid watching the game. You know, I think a moment like this actually makes me kind of appreciate it way more than maybe I have just the last like 2 weeks, because I've been so tired, you know, going to games and traveling back and forth from Carolina and whatnot. But I mean, I don't even remember the question, but it's been,
I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome. Yeah. I think, you know, again, I'm 44. I'm not the most social media driven guy. But you know, Twitter is my main X, whatever you want to call it, my main thing pretty much. And, you know, I see you as when I introed you before you came on, like a rising star, man. You're young, former player. You've got kind of a brand going for yourself. You're all over the map content wise. And like you said, there might be some ups and downs or pros and cons to that. But I think you put in great perspective a year ago, look where you were. And now you're doing what you probably love the most, which is talking hockey. So I think it's awesome, man. Keep it up. I don't know if there's a legal limit to content in a day, but you're certainly crushing it. So let's jump right into it on the Stanley Cup playoff side. You're a New York guy. We know that. Well, I know from following you, Rangers fan, obviously, Blue Crew pod. They've had two chances to close it out. Haven't done it. When this airs, it'll be just before game six. Are you pushing the panic button? You're a little nervous. Where are you at?
It's tough from the fan side to not push the panic button, just because you've seen this happen so many times with this organization where, you know, they have the opportunity to put teams away and they don't. And that's not even like recent history. That goes back to like 10 years ago. You know, you think about like the first round series against Ottawa in 2012, the Rangers should have finished that one off early on. It goes seven games. You know, they win in a one goal game in game seven. And it's just never been easy for the Rangers, it feels like. And, you know, then it's 2 years ago in the conference final, they're up 2-0 in game three. They're up 2-0 in that series and they lose four games in a row to Tampa. You know, last year up 2-0 against the Devils, they lose 4 out of 5 and losing game seven. So it's just, you know, as a fan, it's like the Taylor Swift song, right? Like you remember it all too well. You know, that 10-minute heartbreak story. But you know, from the media side and from the day in, day out perspective, you know, this is a group I've been around, and every time they've had a bad game, they've kind of come back and figured it out and responded in the right way. So, you know, being around the team, I'm not concerned, just because I think this group is actually different. I feel like they're way more mature, you know, than they have been the last 3 years. And they have the right voices in the room, and Pierre Laviolette, and even in a guy like Jonathan Quick, who's not playing but just has that experience and knows what to say and when to say it. And I think they get it done. I don't see this team losing four games in a row in the playoffs, despite who their opponent is. And that gives me a lot of confidence. And, you know, the players all say, like, whether they just won two games in a row or they lost two games in a row, in the playoffs, it doesn't really matter. Things don't carry over from game to game, and I truly believe that. So all I got to do is come out and win a hockey game, whether that's game six or game seven, and I think they find a way to do it at least once. So for me, that side of me is confident. But, you know, you put the fan hat on, and it's like, oh, shit, we're in trouble.
Of the teams currently trailing their best of seven series, which is most likely to rally and advance?
You know, I want to say Colorado, but their opponent is probably the toughest. Like, I don't see Dallas kind of letting up. But you have to think the Avalanche have something more in them, right? And I know losing to Nichushkin's big. Devontae's was, you know, questionable for tonight. Not sure if he's actually going yet or not. But you'd think MacKinnon and Makar and Rantanen, you know, guys like that are not going to go down quietly. And, you know, I saw a stat today. Boomer Gordon from SiriusXM NHL Radio texted me that teams are 6-9 this year in elimination games, you know, winning 40% of the time when they can put a team away. And we've seen this trend of home teams having a 3-1 lead and not being able to do it in game five. You know, most recently it's Florida at home, then the Rangers at home in game five. And last round it was Boston at home against Toronto. So I think Colorado has a chance tonight to just surprise. And then you never know from there. So, like, I think just Colorado is the best team that's down in their series right now, but they are also playing against the toughest opponents. So it's a tough call, but Colorado is my gut instinct.
You mentioned the Val Nichushkin story, suspended 6 months, then he's got to get reinstated. What are you hearing around the rink? What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, I think I'm hearing what everybody else heard, that he, you know, failed the drug test, and I don't know what drug it's for. I don't know what they test for. But what I make of it, you know, it's really just the human side. Like, I, like, you know, I obviously they're losing their leading scorer in the playoffs, but like, you know, it's happened now a couple of times with him, and this is stage three, and you know, it's pretty clear that he has a demon he's facing of some sort, right? Like, addiction is nothing to take lightly. You know, I've never had to deal with it personally, but you know, there's certainly been moments in my family that you know, people have dealt with addiction, and when you're around it, I think it's pretty tough, and it affects those around you. And you know, obviously the team hurts, but I think I would say they're all more concerned about Val and his overall quality of life. So, you know, if this is what needs to happen for him to get better and to have treatment and to just overall recover from this as a human, then, you know, I'm sure everyone in that room would say, listen, his life is more important than a hockey game, you know? But it's obviously something tricky just because you don't really know, like, you don't, they didn't come out with the story, so you don't really know what he's going through.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like speculate and say anything, but you know, just based on my initial reaction and all that stuff, you just hope that, you know, the guy just finds the help he needs.
Did Carson Soucy deserve a one-game suspension, and did Sam Bennett escape supplemental discipline that was maybe necessary in their respective series?
It's a good question again. I think because of who Bennett maybe did it to, he didn't get a punishment. I think that's got to be some truth. And then the same thing for Soucy, right? Because who he did it to, you got to set somewhat of an example, I guess, right? And I think, who is it, Zadorov, that came out and said they got to protect their number one asset or something like that. That was the quote.
Yeah.
So I think both of those can be true. And, you know, I think Bennett's was maybe less egregious or looked less egregious. Although Soucy's, I don't think he's trying to cross check McDavid in the face. You know, Zadorov comes back and gives McDavid a shove that kind of pushes his face into the stick. You know, and listen, I have no dog in either fight, so I'm not like defending either one. It's just, you know, kind of how it goes, right? Like, I've seen way worse things happen and not be suspensions, and I've seen, you know, way less things happen that were suspensions. So you kind of just never really know in these situations. But, you know, listen, I think, the Bennett Marchand one is certainly more interesting just because of who the two guys are than the Soucy McDavid one, because listen, it's Connor McDavid getting cross-checked in the face. You don't really see that happen to the league's best players or best players in any other league for that matter. You know, like, when was the last time you saw LeBron get hit or,
you know, clotheslined or something,
like Aaron Rodgers or something, you know, you just don't really see it happen. So I think they just reacted because it was the league's best player.
Yeah. And personally, knowing Carson Soucy from his time in the minors and then Minnesota, like, he's a foxhole guy. He's a guy you want. He's a tough, hard to play against SOB, but he doesn't have a mean bone in his body like that.
Oh,
to your point, he's not trying to injure him there. If Zadorov doesn't cross check him in the back, you know, maybe he catches him in the chops and, you know, in the upper part of his chest as opposed to, you know, right in the kisser. So,
100%.
I'd agree there. What's been your biggest takeaway, Johnny, so far the Stanley Cup playoffs? Is there anything like an overarching theme or something strategy-wise? Like, I'm seeing a lot of depth in goaltending, right? Like, teams using multiple goalies because of injury or performance. Like, is there anything jump out to you as a whole this year so far through almost two rounds?
Well, is it depth in goaltending or just random goaltending? I mean,
yeah,
you know, like Shelovs and Pickard now and, you know.
Well, we had Aiden Hill last year. I mean,
And Connor Hellebuck getting shelled, you know, like, it's, I don't know if it like takes away from the importance of a goaltender or it shows that you just need more depth. Like you said, Joe, like, you know, I like, do teams now need that strong 1A, 1B, or do you go for like a Jeremy Swayman, Igor Shesterkin, who can kind of put a team on their back? You know, like, you thought you had that in Hellebuck in Winnipeg, and that series was a disaster for the Jets. And you look across all the goaltenders now, and it's like, you know, I think outside of Shesterkin and Swayman, it's all kind of up for grabs. Like, even Georgiev, you know, isn't like really, you know what I'm saying? Like, Ottinger's in that conversation too, but it just feels like the NHL is now, and I think Boston was like the first team to really have that tandem, but now they're going away from it. So it's this weird goaltending dynamic where, you know, you want to have a guy who you can ride, but you also want to have a guy you can count on if the number one guy isn't doing it. So it's goaltending now has become very, very odd, I feel like, in the NHL.
Yeah, the days of Lundqvist running with it for 16 games, even Fleury from his Penguins days, early Penguins days. I think about Juan Brodeur from when I was growing up, Hasek. Like, that's not the case anymore, right? And it is interesting. I feel like goaltending coaches might have the hardest job in the league. They don't get as fired as much as head coaches, but every night guys are getting shelled that are perennial, you know, number one goaltenders. And I think it's just the skill these days and the way these guys can shoot the puck, it makes goaltenders' lives and goaltending coaches' lives be quite honest, hell on a nightly basis. Kind of crazy. From a team perspective, who's jumped out? Who's maybe surprised you the most in the playoffs? Either somebody that's been eliminated or somebody that's gone a little bit deeper so far than you would have thought.
I think there's two answers to that. And a team that really surprised so far, which shouldn't be a surprise because they were good all year, but Vancouver and what they've been able to do as far as limiting their opponent to shots and playing well 5-on-5 defensively. I mean, they made a couple of mistakes last night that really cost them. Just like, you know, sleepy, mindless mistakes. You know, on the second goal, on Nugent Hopkins' goal, a little bit lazy in the neutral zone, and then five guys puck watching on the Evan Bouchard game-winning goal. It cost them very quickly, but the Canucks, I'd say, have surprised in a good way. And then I thought Tampa was going to be much better in the playoffs. Obviously, Florida is this, you know, well-rounded group that can beat you up and score goals, but I really expected more from the Lightning. You know, I did not expect that series to be five games in either direction, but with Vasilevsky and Hedman and Stamkos and Kucherov and the years they had, I thought we'd just see a little bit more from Tampa. And you know, that window is now pretty much shut, I would say, right? With Stamkos's contract in question. You know, obviously they can retool, but I think they might be starting to talk about a rebuild over there because, you know, they've been competitive now for what feels like 15 years. And, you know, it looks like that time is starting to run out.
All right, let's shift to some of the content you've been working on lately. Tell us about Morning Cup of Hockey with yourself and Colby Cohen.
So that's been a blast. I mean, Colby and I have gone back now for a couple of years. I reached out to my senior year of college, like coldly on LinkedIn, just for advice on how to get into media and broadcasting and whatnot, because he played in college. And then, you know, I thought just like his career trajectory was something that I would love to follow. So, you know, we've just been talking back and forth for a couple of years. And then, you know, I had this idea a couple of years ago. I'm a big NBA fan as well. And, you know, I watch all sports. I'm not a huge NFL or MLB fan, but I'm a big Knicks Rangers fan. So, you know, every morning I'd wake up and watch like Get Up or First Take with Stephen A. Smith, Mike Greenberg, Alan Hahn, all those guys. And there'd never be any hockey talk. And, you know, as a kid who grew up watching NHL Network, all I wanted was like fresh hockey content in the morning. And it was always NHL Network reruns. So, you know, I was like, why can't we just, in this world we live in now, you can do everything kind of remotely and from home. Why not do a morning hockey show where people can hop on their computer at 9 a.m., like whether they're just getting to work or working from home or finishing a workout and whatnot, and just kind of, you know, participate in morning hockey content. Like, you know, the best part about it is our live chat. So people are tuning in and they're also commenting on it and their voices are being heard. It's kind of like this radio call-in vibe as well, where, you know, it's like somewhat communal. And, you know, listen, I'm not really much of a morning person, to be honest, but I've always loved those morning debate style shows, like, you know, the Stephen A. Max Kellerman debates in the mornings. Like, even if I didn't really know what was going on, I love just like having them on in the background. And I think that's something that we could have been or can be in the hockey world is just that, like, you know, you wake up and if you want to hear about everything that happened last night that you couldn't really tune into, like, we got you covered. And you can kind of feel like you're listening in, and you could hate us and you can love us and you can want to argue with us. I mean, that's the best thing too, is that like Colby and I see the game and see the world a little bit differently just because our generational differences. You know, I believe he's like 7 years older than me. You know, we kind of grew up in different eras of hockey, so we don't see everything the same, and it's good to have different opinions. And, you know, he's never afraid to disagree or argue with me or even call me dumb, and I'm never afraid to yell back at him. So, you know, I think it's a good dynamic that we have, and it's pretty debate style, and we're both passionate about it too. So like we're texting each other angry after a show also, like, dude, like you were wrong, like F you, like all, you know, all this crap. So it continues on after the show, which is great. But yeah, it's really just about the the morning fresh kind of quality of what you see around other sports. And we felt that hockey needed that.
I love that. I love the genesis of it. Like, it's your idea. You're like, well, hell, why isn't this out there? I'm going to go do it. So that's really cool. And I'm guessing, look, I'm from outside of Philly originally. I'm guessing it's that New York in you that you're like, I don't mind a little debate in the morning. I don't mind a little controversy in the morning. Even if it's kind of background noise, some chatter is probably good for you. Is that, you think that's fair? You said you're not a morning guy, but maybe a little minor argument in the morning gets you going.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I wake up and I'm fired up every day for the most part, which is nice. But I'm a night owl, so like
for me, you know, I'm up till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. every night kind of watching hockey, and that's been the hardest part, is just waking up with like a lot of energy. But yeah, it's always good to get yourself going. Like it's a great way to start the day too, and it's like, it's fun. It's something I look forward to, and you know, I feel pretty alive and pretty woken up whenever our show is on.
Where did you get the idea for Open Skate? Like your top Twitter, you're pinned, you're wheeling around with Sidney Crosby for crying out loud, and you're just like, you're just chatting with him. Where'd you come up with that concept?
So that actually wasn't me. That was Bleacher Report. They had the idea, and they came to me, which is still something I am like so beyond grateful for, because it's the best thing that's like ever happened to me. To just skate around the ice with like the NHL's top superstars, and some of them are my friends, which is cool. So it's fun to do that. But yeah, Bleacher Report just kind of reached out to me. I had been talking to Evan Spore for like about a year and you know, trying to do some content for them, but didn't really have the plan. And, you know, one day he just kind of came to me with this idea and asked if I wanted to do it. And I was like, dude, are you kidding me? Like, I'll pay you to do this. Like, yeah, it's sick. And yeah, it's been unbelievable. The coolest thing I've ever gotten to do, for sure.
Daily Faceoff as a whole, I had Frank Saravalli on, almost a year ago now, probably. And we talked a little bit about the evolution of Daily Faceoff, right? It used to be where a lot of folks went to just get their line combination, scouts, broadcasters like myself, whatever. Now the content side of Daily Faceoff has really taken off. Touch on that for a minute.
Daily Faceoff is a part of, you know, the Nation Network, and there's a lot of different shows across the network. You know, one show that I go on a lot is Oilers Nation. There's also Daily Faceoff Live, Canucks Army. There's all these different kinds of shows, and it's cool to see the different communities under one umbrella. And I think that's kind of like where hockey is sort of headed. You know, there are some shows that are more national, but those niche shows are needed as well. You know, like I get to do the national one with Daily Faceoff and then do like the Ranger podcast separately. And, you know, it's two different audiences for both, which is cool, because you have the people that follow the league as a whole, but then, you know, Daily Faceoff also has a lot of listeners that follow specific teams and love just like knowing the ins and outs and everything going on with those specific teams. And you would know that yourself, Joe, working for a specific team too, right? Like people are obsessed with everything the Minnesota Wild do. And, you know, I think that's something special also. And something that the Daily Faceoff does so well is just focusing on specific teams for people that, let's face it, like, you know, there are a lot of hockey fans who don't give a crap about other teams. Like it's just part of sports, right? You know, I'd say more people than not just watch their own team and don't tune into other games. So I think it's cool to have like the mix of the two. And yeah, Daily Faceoff has been, you know, incredible to me in my first few months there. And you know, it's something that's really growing really quickly, and I think it's going to take off and hopefully be you know, a hub for hockey over the next few years.
When did you decide you wanted to get into media?
I think it goes back to when I was a kid. I always loved like doing, you know, it's funny. I would play NHL like as a younger kid and have the volume off on the TV and like kind of broadcast the game as I was playing it.
Really?
Like, pretending to be like Sam Rosen or Doc Emrick. But I didn't necessarily want to do like play by play. It was just, I just always like loved the media aspect of it. Like I loved the interviews on Hockey Night in Canada and hearing the players talk, even though a lot of the answers were boring. It was just something I loved, and I was never really camera shy. So it was something that kind of just like came natural to me. But when I was a freshman in college, I played in this thing called the Maccabee Games, which is like essentially the Jewish Olympics. Like you go to Israel and you compete against other countries in a bunch of different sports, but it's only for Jewish athletes. And my coach, Greg Gardner, who ended up being my assistant coach at Mercyhurst, like handed me a Powerade bottle one day and was like, go interview some of the guys. We'll post videos on Facebook. And, you know, it was something goofy, but it was kind of like I don't know if you've seen it, but Paul Bissonnette did like that Biz Does BC thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of felt like that, like just me and Israel, like at different landmarks talking to my teammates and stuff. And it was called Lessons with Laz. And a lot of it was, you know, it was funny. The way it ended was two teammates of mine, Carter Horwitz and Ben Scharf, actually did like their own show, just like with a list of all the dumb shit that I had said over the trip. Which was funny, and they called that one Lessons for Laz, because, you know, one of my it's a blessing and a curse that I don't really think a lot before I speak. You know, it gets me in trouble from time to time, but sometimes it makes for funny stories. So you know, that was something where I just kind of realized I was good at it, I guess. And you know, people on Facebook like reached out to me and said they loved it and all that stuff. So it was never like really something I had planned on doing. It kind of just like happened naturally, and then once I realized that I could like maybe do it, I ran with it.
What's your comfort level like asking questions in media scrums as you continue to sort of evolve in the media world and as a journalist, a broadcaster, whatever, you know, term you want to put on it? How's your comfort level in those situations?
Well, it depends who it's with. You know, the first time you're around a coach, it's always a little intimidating because you don't know how they typically answer questions. Like, you know, the first time I asked Tort something, my heart was beating out of my chest. But he actually, you know, it's funny. He actually kind of gave me like a little kudos after my first question to him. The Rangers were playing the Flyers, and the Flyers had like two games left. And I asked Tort, so I was like, since you're an MSG, it's hard not to ask this question. You know, you guys are battling now to your last game of the season. Is there any similar feelings to when you did this in 2010 when you and Peter Laviolette were on the opposite benches? You were coaching the Rangers, he was coaching the Flyers. And he like kind of didn't really think about it. He was like, I'm not concerned with Peter Laviolette or the Rangers, like worried about our team, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, there's like, and then like, I had to explain myself a little bit. So he kind of jumped on it, and I had to like bounce back a little bit, and people were like, oh, like you held your own there with Torts. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that was the thing. But then after scrum ended, he looked at me and goes, great question, but not a chance. And, you know, that was kind of like a comfort thing for me that like, if I can get Torts to say that, like, you know, I definitely feel like I'm on the right track. But, you know, with coaches, it's a little bit more nerve-wracking because, you know, when you're around coaches, you know, I've been around a lot of coaches all my life where after you lose a game, like, you don't want to talk to anybody. And the last person you want to be stuck in the elevator with is a coach, and you know they don't want to have to answer any questions. So those are always tough, but the players have always been great. And I think, you know, I always try to pick, you know, a different angle with my questions and really show my knowledge of the game, where, you know, not discrediting anyone in the media, but there are people who ask like a little bit more of the basic questions, you know, that like are the pretty obvious ones, right? Like in games, like sometimes the stories write themselves, but what are those little things that go unnoticed? So I always try to hit on those. And I think when I do interact with people for the first time, sometimes I see it in their face that they understand that I know the game. Yeah. My comfort has grown a lot just over the year, you know, in talking to a guy like Peter Laviolette, who's been around for so long. And, you know, I feel like I have a good kind of relationship with him, even though it's always just like podium questions. You know, we've never really talked outside of the media room, so it's tough to like tell him my background. But, you know, there was one instance about a week ago or 2 weeks ago where the PR guy, Ryan, had said last question, and Peter noticed that my hand was raised but wasn't called on, and he gave me an extra question, which was super kind. But I think it also just kind of, you know, speaks to what he expected out of me asking a question.
Yeah,
you know?
It validates that he sees you around all the time and knows you're putting in the work, right?
That's cool. It was really cool, actually.
What have you thought of ESPN and TNT's coverage a few years into the TV deals?
I think it's been great, and I actually do love that they are different, you know?
Yeah, it's a great point. They are vastly different.
Vastly different, and I know there are more complaints about ESPN than TNT, but you know, they have that show, The Point, which I love watching. You know, I think that's an added bonus for ESPN, right? Like, they're doing bonus shows on top of doing the coverage. And, you know, similar to what the Morning Cup of Hockey is, like, it's great to have, like, a part in the interruption of hockey on, you know, at night. Like, I think that's great. You know, I have a lot of friends at both. You know, Emily Kaplan has been so big for me in my career. She's, like, basically an older sister to me. You know, always has my back and everything, and kind of teaches me a lot of things in just media and things that I will continue to experience for the first time. And then, you know, I've become friends with like Arto Cal and John Buchegross and Kobe Armstrong and Liam McHugh, and, you know, all these different people at TNT. Kenny Albert has been another guy who's been so kind to me and so big for my career. Like, it's really cool to take it all in as a fan, but also to know them all personally, and know how much they care and know how much they want the product to be good. And I think that's something that maybe goes unnoticed by the typical fan, like, who just think that they're hopping on and doing a job. It's not just a job for these people. It's something they take a lot of pride in and want and understand the opportunity they have to grow this sport, but also understand the pressure that comes with it. You know, like PK Subban's another one. You know, he knows he has to be entertaining, right? Because for years and years and years, hockey always got that buttoned up, boring kind of, you know, narrative around it when it comes to the coverage. So, you know, PK knows he has to play into that a little bit and be more of a spark, you know? So it's not an easy job that these people have, because there is a lot of pressure on them to deliver. And I think it's been great seeing just hockey on at bars and people talking about the game more. You know, you see Pat McAfee now doing it, which is incredible, even though he might not even be the biggest hockey guy. Like, his whole hockey is awesome. His segment is, how could you not love it? You know, right. And I listen to it, even though I'm not like a, I'm not really a Pat McAfee show listener.
Yeah, me neither. But I have noticed, like, he had Fleury on. He's
Bedard, even.
Yeah,
you know?
he's dialed in. Scott Van Pelt is having players on SportsCenter after games. He had Garland on the other night when Vancouver won.
Yeah,
I think
I'm listening to
point.
More. You know, I'm listening to other voices outside of hockey because they're talking hockey.
Yeah,
and that's great.
Yeah. Real quick on the college scene, because I know you've obviously got a deep rooted interest in that, having played at the collegiate level. How good of a spot is the NCAA game in right now?
I'd say it's the best it's ever been. You know, you think about the last couple of years. What was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, four out of the top five picks are all Michigan University players. You know, that's insane. And Macklin Celebrini obviously going one this year, most likely. You know, you're seeing a lot of top picks come out of college now. And I think it's so great for the players' development and the guys that I was playing college with that, like, have taken the NHL by storm, especially the defensemen, are like Cale Makar, Charlie McAvoy, Quinn Hughes, Adam Fox. You know, those are four of the top defensemen in the league, and they all played multiple years of NCAA hockey. And I think it's something that, you know, I talk about a lot, and growing the sport. I think, you know, growing the game is something that's been talked about a lot in different ways they can do it. But I think giving more attention to college hockey will just make the game more popular, because you look at college basketball and college football, and all the fans know who these draft picks are because they watch college football and college basketball all year long. So if you put more attention on college hockey, there will be more hype going into these kids' young careers. You know, I think it's just how that it's a transactional kind of thing where, you know, if you have Macklin Celebrini on TV 15 times a year before he's drafted, people will know who he is. And I think that's great. And I think that's something that is important to continue to grow and put more money and effort into. And, you know, 10 years from now, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say the CHL, you know, will be light years behind, but it seems like college is just becoming the new thing to do and the new path for success in the NHL, just because you can really just grow into yourself, not only as a physical hockey player, but as a human being too, because you're in class, you're surrounded by peers, you're, you know, kind of learning your social life. And that's a big part of being in the NHL too, is like learning how to be a person, right? You know, it's not normal necessarily for a 17-year-old kid to go from a billet family then into the NHL and know how to behave and know how to treat themselves and whatnot. And I think college kind of gives you that more, even though there's less games played and the schedule is different, it's more of a pro lifestyle, if that makes sense.
Do you have a player comp for Macklin Celebrini?
I got to do two of BU's games, and, you know, one player comp that I've seen Jay Pandolfo talk about, which, you know, he mentioned on the coaches' calls and stuff, and I think he's been saying a little bit lately, is like a Jonathan Toews.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a popular one, and I'd say that's the one that I think is the most. I think people have said Crosby too, which is a little tough just because Crosby's Crosby. But Macklin will have that sort of impact as well. And I'd say Toews is like the one that stands out the most to me.
Token Minnesota Wild question. Hate to call it that because I'm a Minnesota Wild employee. But Should Brock Faber win the Calder?
I think I said yes like a month ago, the last time I talked about it. Just because you ask a lot of a rookie defenseman to come in and play the minutes he played, have the impact he had. And that's not taking anything away from Connor Bedard. Like, it's obviously between those two, right? Like, it's got to be. But you look at the team that Bedard had around him. Like, he was basically playing on an AHL team. And what he did basically lived up to the hype. But same with Brock Faber. I, like, don't want to give an answer because I think both guys kind of deserve it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, look, but, I'm the same way. I don't want to take anything away from Bedard. Amazing. But I watch Faber every night play 25 minutes against the McKinnons and Rantanens and McDavids and Crosbys of the world, and he didn't look out of place. And to me, that's like, whoa.
And I don't think there's a wrong answer, you know?
Yeah. And you want to talk about Twitter visceral? Anytime I'm like, Faber for Calder, Blackhawks fans get right in those mentions. They can't stand it. Wild fans jump right on in.
That's all they got.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, I call this quick hits. Five questions. Want the first thing that comes to mind. Really appreciate your time. I'll get you out here after this. What should be the name of the new Utah team?
Huh. I like the name Beast.
The Utah Beast?
Yeah, I think it's sick.
All right. I'm cool with that.
I don't even think it's up in the air, but that's my pick.
That's all right. Well, I gave you Johnny Content as a nickname. Yeah, so there you go. I'm not going to question Utah Beast. Who's the best former player that's currently an NHL analyst or host?
Does Gretzky count? He's on the panel.
Yeah. Actually, right. I do enjoy the great one when he's on.
Are you saying the best at like their job or the best player?
Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. That was confusing. I was like,
My bad. Yeah, I should have made that more clear. Who's best at their job that used to play?
I love Colby Armstrong. Because he does it all too, right? He does color and he does the desk and the studio and everything. Yeah. So
it's a great point.
Colby Armstrong's my pick.
And of course the Chicklets podcast and game notes and all that stuff. Favorite thing about Twitter?
That anyone is accessible if you want to get in touch with them.
Well, that's how I found you.
Yeah.
Most annoying fan base on Twitter.
Honestly, the Rangers. you gotta love them.
Hey, if anybody's allowed to say it, it's you.
Yeah. You gotta love them. I mean, they're passionate, but man, they are quick to take their own narrative and run with it. I mean, I had Brian Boyle on my show like 2 weeks ago and he was complimenting the players, and the way he phrased something, Ranger fans attacked him for it. And he was saying something nice.
And he's a former Ranger.
Who
will win the Conn Smythe?
Well, it's not going to be Swayman because Boston won't win the cup, but I'm just going to say Vinny Trocheck.
Okay. I'm okay with that. I would absolutely.
Who do you think's going to win it?
If the Dallas Stars won the Stanley Cup, but Wyatt Johnson's 11-1 odds. And if I was into that realm of the world, I'd be all over that.
Yeah.
The kid's been a stud. Dallas is loaded. If they get past Colorado, I don't see, you know, potentially who beats them. But again, that would pain me. First of all, I hate Dallas being a Philly guy.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
What is Dallas?
Well, Eagles, Cowboys. Football?
Yeah, that's right.
And I hate the Stars because of the Wild. I mean, it would make me sick to my stomach if Dallas Stars won the Stanley Cup. But if they did, Wyatt Johnson for me would probably be the guy that I would think would claim the Conn Smythe. Anyway, Johnny,
let me ask you a question, Joe. Let me ask you a question before we go. Is there any city that has the worst sports luck than Minnesota?
Dude, I mean, it's funny you say that because being a Philly guy and living out here now, I often will say to folks up here, like, hey, like I emphasize, you know, I feel your pain because in Philly, and they're like, well, you've won before. Well, yeah, but it's like one championship, two championships in my lifetime, right? So like, I understand where Minnesota fans are coming from. They don't want to hear it because there's been some Philadelphia success in my life.
But at least they get to the finals too. The Eagles and Phillies get there. The Flyers have been there.
Yeah.
Sixers should be better.
But you're right, dude. It's been, I think the Twins, you know, in the early 90s is their last championship, if you don't count the WNBA. And they are, the fans here, you know, I feel their pain because they are beaten down at times. It's a great question. Good job by you.
I talked to Johnny Brodzinski about it all the time because he's a big Minnesota sports fan.
Yeah.
And he's a big Anthony Edwards guy. And even the Timberwolves had a 2-0 lead. And now they're down 3-2 against the Nuggets. And the Wild are always, you know, no offense to you, that they're pretty mid every year.
Yep.
Right. Like, I hope they can figure it out because Minnesota is a great sports town. But that city just like they have no winners, man. It's sad because
it'd be a really fun city to see, like, get to a championship and everything if they could have one team that can figure it out.
Yep. Plug your shows real quick. And I gave your Twitter handle, JLazzy23. Plug your shows real quick.
Yeah, Joe, thank you. Seriously, I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. And again, thank you for the flexibility. But yeah, you can find me on Morning Cup of Hockey every Monday to Thursday on the Daily Faceoff YouTube channel from 9 to like 10:15 every morning. We're live, which is fun. And then if you are a Ranger fan listening to this, I do the Blue Crew Pod, which we're doing basically every game day throughout the playoffs. So you can see that on YouTube as well. And yeah, I post it all over Twitter and everything. So thank you, Joe. I really appreciate it. This was fun. And again, I hope to see the Minnesota Wild be competitive, because I will go out and say, this is the last thing I'll finish on. I think Kirill Kaprizov is the most underrated player in the entire NHL, and he could be the best winger in the league. Like, if you put him on a better team, everyone's saying it.
I love it. I watch him every night. He is a bona fide superstar. Mm-hmm. Thanks for making the time for me. I know you got a busy schedule. All the best in your career moving forward. And look to connect with you down the line. Johnny Lazarus, my guest here on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. Check out all of his work. JLazzy23 on Twitter. He gave you the Daily Faceoff, Morning Cup of Hockey info. And we'll check in with you down the line. Thanks again, bud.
Thank you.
Big thanks to my guest, Johnny Lazarus. And I appreciate you listening to another episode of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell, presented by SodaStick. We'll catch you next time.